USA Chat, May 25th, 2021. In this audio, other people's sharings are omitted as much as possible.
Hi, everyone.
Farnaz, welcome Sat and thanks her for her time. The session opens to experiences. A few people share their experiences and then Sat asks Farnaz to start with questions.
Sachin, the first question is about unmasking. The questioner is asking, what is unmasking?
Unmasking is when you are so saturated with the wisdom rather than lie that when a thought comes, you can unmask it. You can see that the beyond that is a silence. Beyond the words and suggestion that the mind gives, there is an enormous silence. And this is what it means by unmasking. You cannot unmask something that you do not know it has a mask on. But through the wisdom and the truth that is being shown to us, we begin to value the trust in the truth more than the suggestions of the thoughts and emotions.
Satu, next question is about the explanation you gave us last Tuesday. Last Tuesday you talked about be conscious of unconscious thoughts and how to distinguish between conscious and unconscious thought. At the end of your response, you said, be awake, be conscious of your silence, be conscious of your expansion, be conscious of this stillness. And the question is this, is being conscious of my silence automatically being conscious of unconscious thoughts?
What I was really saying is to stay conscious. When you are in the silence, don't doze off, you know. Consciously be there. When we are conscious of our silence and our thoughts, what happens is we keep ourselves awake in both the state. And so you're alert, and so you can observe, you can be transformed by it. You know, there are so many times that we get lost in our thoughts. And we also get lost in our silence. What I mean by getting lost, meaning that losing that conscious awareness. And being like this in the silence is fine. But then you would have two worlds, the inner world and the outer world. The world that you transcend this world, and then you come to this world, and you transcend the other world of truth. So in order to stand in the wall of being of it, not of it, and having balance, the key is to our attention to be conscious, present. And this way we get used to being able to function and also to use that silence continuously in our day. And yes, when you're conscious of your thoughts, then they cease to exist. And when you're conscious of your silence, you see that there is no thoughts.
With Sat's blessing, Farnaz asks the next question.
This is from a DVD, To Be, from September 14 of 2004. In that DVD, you say, "We have bombarded our mind and we have cluttered it with falsehood. When we empty it, however, our mind becomes an avenue of awareness, and awareness is God. Is it easy to do? It is easier than breathing." And the question is, when you refer to this being easier than breathing, what does that mean?
Means when you become extremely simple. You see, breathing is very simple and automatic. The breathing does not need much effort. It just happens as it happens. And the same analogy works there. It is not like you come from the street and you have no background and I say it's easier than breathing. It is a lie. If you think that anybody can achieve this simplicity. But is it easy, extremely easy, for when the simplicity has rooted in our being, that our thoughts are simple, our way of being is simple, in that simplicity, you're already there. You already achieved it because it's not clutter anymore. So as much as what was said is true, but it really refers to the fact that there is a preparation that needed, which is to being interested, to hear the truth, to contemplate on the truth, to put it to use, and simplify your thinking and the sensitivity and all of that. And then you realize how simple it is to be at home. It would be like, if we go back to breathing, if you have interfere with the flow of breathing, then the breathing is not easy, right? But if you simplify your complication of disturbing the natural flow of breathing, then you can say it's very simple. You just breathe.
Then, Sat, this simplicity, when you're referring to simple, is another word for that, like natural, close to our natural state?
Yeah. Yeah. Just this, just being as was said many times before, a state of being is much, much, much more simpler than becoming, right? But how many of us can hear that and just stay and be? Because the flow of going out, it is so strong and has been repeated for so much that it is hard to achieve that simplicity. But once it's achieved, then you will see how easy it was and how do we lose it? What happened to it?
And when you say simplifying mind, it means with practices particularly stop?
I think when you saturate yourself with a simple, utter life and you really contemplate on the truth and apply it, yes. Yes. You know, when we go to school, say a child starts the school, the first grade, second grade, and so on, they're constantly learning different classes, different subjects, and all of that. They're learning. And then that's just one branch of the life of a child is school. And then it is so many other branches of learning, curiosity of the world, living in the house and with ideas that happens there. So when we start on a spiritual path, we are not collecting wisdom. We are getting help from wisdom to unplug, to undo the knowledge that we had before. It's not that we get rid of our schooling, all the things we learn. It's just that we understand this is not the main thing for our happiness and joy. It's just a part of the physical life. It is not who we are, whether our profession or our education. So it's like through the truth we see and put everything in perspective, what we believe to be the end of all, we find out that it isn't. It's just our vision becomes more in tune with the truth rather than Maya. And therefore, we have an understanding that surpassed the physical understanding. Honestly, that happens where things become clear for you without having any knowledge before or any struggle to learn or to understand. It's just that source that we are, that is omniscient, gets activated in our life through simplicity.
Thank you so much, Sat. May I ask one more question here?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's about another quote. You say, "We are all born with handicaps, different brothers, but you stand the ground of truth and fight for it if you have to, and sacrifice whatever you have to for it. That is how you become an example for others. If we feed people's weaknesses, how in the world are we an example for them?" And it's from Private Conversation, November 22nd, 2011. The question is about feeding others' weaknesses. How can we not do that? What exactly it is, so we can be vigilant not to do it?
It's very tricky because what I really meant in the face of the truth, which we always go back to it, is that I have seen compassionate people doing damages by their compassion, because their compassion is narrow. It is by memory. It is not by intuition. And yes, when we see weakness in ourselves, we can tell other people about how we are struggling, and we get their compassion in the form of empathy and sympathy. But this is good in the level of the day-to-day functioning. But when it comes to the spirituality, that's damaging this type of empathy and sympathy. Instead, when it's toward ourselves, one of our own weakness, we stand up and stay by not giving it more energy, by not giving it more substance of existence. Now, once we do that for ourselves and we're in a position where we can do that to others, sometimes someone that has recognized itself or realized itself might come across as an uncompassionate person. But really, it's not true, because you might see a weakness in someone when you are saturated with truth. You don't want to relieve or remove immediately or show compassion and sympathy. What you want to do is in your own silence help that person, or if it's verbal, give them a tool that actually they can get rid of their weakness. This is the difference of approach between the inner life than those that most people live by. The compassion takes a different form. You know, I have seen people when they hear someone not feeling well or something and they go into sorrowful, whether they genuinely feel it for them or they feel that, thank God I'm not like them or whatever the reason is. But it doesn't do any good. When you're wise enough, when there is a need of showing compassion as far as verbal compassion, you show it. But if it is not, you give them a strength to get rid of it themselves. And this is comes from being wise and having worked on yourself and your own weaknesses. We can either, when we have a weakness, to struggle with it or use our wisdom and just understand the untruth of it, or understand that by staying, it can be eliminated, or just by showing strength and equanimity. And this is why the wise, our guru, the saint and sages always point you to inner life, because somehow by achieving that, you know how to live in this jungle intuitively, at least more than before.
Hi, Sat. This is Adrian. Can you help a little bit more on how to encourage people, well, like our children, to listen to their heart and not their mind?
Yeah. Well, it's a very, very tricky question because each person is different. Each child is different. But let me think a little bit to see what comes up for specifically what you're asking. Well, I can share what I did and also to see if it works for you. The decision that a child needs to make or a young adult needs to make has to be hard for them because they're just beginning to go into the world and experiencing the duality that like never before. So I would have a heart-to-heart talk when the time is right to say that there is another way to deal with the world directly, and that is to go into the silence and find the silence and ask the question and be quiet and see if there is any movement in you, and then go and live a life. Nothing outwardly will change for you. It's just that it's an added bonus, added help to have this practice. And if the mind is very busy, which it is in every teenager that I know, then again have a heart-to-heart talk. And first, we give a tremendous understanding. I always give my own example. When the kids were small and I wanted to make a point, I would always identify with where they are standing by saying, when I was your age, I totally get it. My mind was crowded and I was getting a lot of suggestions from outside. Sometimes I would get a stress. Sometimes I would have an anxiety and all of that until I realized and then go on to give a wise choice to them, or to him or to her, that would help them. Now, as far as what the fruit of your effort for your young one goes, then the result is up to them. In other words, is up to them to put it to practice or not. But my experience with my own kids have been that it will never be wasted. It might not be used for a long, long time. And the other thing we do is we avoid repeating a truth with them because it becomes frustrating. I think it's when we talk heart to heart once in their life is better than little talk of nagging, well, you can meditate or you can do this. It just goes above their head. So I would say when the occasion is right and when you feel it in your heart and he is receptive, then you will have a heart to heart and give your own example that every human being get lost, confused, or stressful, or have an anxiety attack and things like this. And this is what has helped me. And just to be very transparent and very honest with our kids and not to be in a position where we are telling them to do something, but to say that I get it. And what you are going through or what your mind is presenting is the whole society is having the same problem. But I have some gift. Or, but I have learned this. Or, but I have something to tell you. Some secret to tell you that I just discovered. And sometimes you can put a book beside their bed and not say anything. And in the right time, if they need it, they would breeze through it and maybe they get something from it. I hope that was helpful for you.
We have a request for a razor meditation, if you like.
Well, I'm going to give a little bit of, for 1 minute, about the erase meditation so everybody is prepared, and then we do it next week. Erase meditation came to me in one of my classes, a different class than trust meditation during the meditation. And I think for most beginners or most people, something visible is very effective. Rather than saying go to your silence and just feel the silence and stay there. So for that reason, I think, because I wasn't given the reason, in my meditation I saw a big eraser that though no hand was connected to it. It was just the eraser. And the eraser, as if the movement of eraser magically started erasing my body, starting from the head to toe. And as it was doing that and going down, if I still there was a thought, the eraser, as if it knew, it would come up and erase the head another time. And as the erasing was going on, I felt freer and freer and freer. I felt lighter and lighter and lighter. So that meditation must have been just for me at that time. And all I know is that when I was not aware of the eraser anymore, I was not aware of anything else either. And that was what my experience was. And so, again, because it happened in the classroom, I felt like if it wasn't supposed to be shared like a stop meditation, that I kept it to myself over 20 years, then it would have not happened on that moment. So that's how the erase meditation came. And a few times that I've shared it, I haven't shared it very much at all. people that did do it at that moment, they felt the same way. So have that in mind, and then we do it next week. Namaste to all of you.